And so I'm going to continue the theme of emergent anomalies. And so actually, thank you, Anton, for giving a lot of the introduction of my talk already. So I want to talk about symmetry-protected topological states of matter that arise without a gap, and in particular, ones that have surface states that can only arise in a gapless system and not in a gap system. And so a kind of motivating example for this that is probably very familiar to the audience is a Weyl semimetal. So in a Weyl semimetal, you have these surface Fermi arcs, which are kind of like a fraction of a Fermi surface that could not occur on their own in two dimensions. And they can only arise at the surface of a gapless system. They're intrinsically tied to the bulk Weyl nodes. And you know, as we heard in the last talk, there's a, you know, these Weyl nodes are symmetry protected. They require translation and charge conservation. And the surface arcs are intrinsically tied to this emergent anomaly that we heard about in the last talk. So what do I mean by emergent? So you need a separation of the Weyl nodes in momentum space. That means you have an emergent valley charge conservation. And then this has a mixed anomaly with the actual U1 in translation, as we just heard in the last talk. So the idea is that these surface arcs are kind of required for charge conservation if you think about this anomaly in a finite system. And so they really are directly related to this emergent anomaly. So the question I want to ask today is, can we have things that are intrinsically gapless and fundamentally interacting systems? So we know interacting systems can give you interesting possibilities like mod insulators or fractionalized phases. Actually, I won't talk about fractionalized phases today, more like the analog of boson SPTs in gapless systems. Okay, so the plan for today is to give a very quick recap of some essential feature of gapped bosonic SPTs. I think the audience is largely expert on this, so it's more just like a reminder of some things that many of you already know that will come into play later. And then I want to talk about examples of intrinsically gapless SPTs that can be understood, that have the following structure. Their bulk will not be a gap system, but it will actually be a gapless system. And there'll be an emergent anomaly in the symmetry, so that means that the anomaly is only present at low energies. It's not there at the lattice scale. And I'll show how this emergent anomaly is actually tied to the presence of topological edge states that are confined to the edge despite that the system doesn't have a bulk gap. All right, so the basic feature of a gap symmetry protected topological phase is that it can't be connected to a trivial insulator without breaking symmetry. And we know many examples like electronic topological insulators and superconductors or a Haldane spin chain. And the important feature here is that if the symmetry is intact at the edge cannot have a short-range entangled symmetric state. So it either has to be gapless and symmetric, or in high enough dimensions, there are more exotic options. And so what I want to focus on today are SPT-like phases that come in spin systems. And so a kind of famous example, at least a theoretical example of this, is the Levin-Gu SPT, which is just a defined on a spin half system on a triangular lattice. And it, the ground state looks almost like an ordinary paramagnet in that it's an equal weight superposition of all different kind of domain wall configurations. So it's a disordered, non-magnetically ordered state. But unlike a trivial paramagnet, it has certain phases in this superposition. You basically get a minus sign if you have an odd number of domain walls and a plus sign if you have an even number. And that's what really distinguishes it. And so the anatomy of this thing is that you, in the bulk, these spins are gapped. They look indistinguishable from a paramagnet. And the only action is going on at the boundary. And in these boson systems, you can actually think of the boundary as a spin chain that has a local tensor product structure to its low energy Hilbert space. but where the effective symmetry action, instead of, say, locally flipping each spin, does something more complicated. It can't be written exactly on site. So the symmetry action, like projected into the low energy states at the boundary, looks like flipping all the spins and then multiplying by a phase that depends on how many domain walls you added to the system to preserve this minus sign locking to number of domain walls. And so this non-on-site phases here can't be removed by redefining your symmetry. And they form a symmetry obstruction to disordering the edge. So if I start with the edge in a magnet, which breaks the symmetry, if I want to restore the symmetry, I would need to proliferate domain walls in the boundary. And you can show that this kind of non-on-site action actually provides an obstacle to doing that, in that if you look at two different ways from going from, say, one domain wall to three domain walls, like in these pictures, they differ. Sorry, this shouldn't be plus or minus one. This should be just minus one. The amplitude for tunneling between these and these two different paths differs by a minus sign. And so these processes actually destructively interfere and prevent you from reaching a disordered state. So this is one way of understanding what the anomaly looks like in boson systems. And so as a result of this anomaly, the edge cannot be gapped and short-range entangled if it preserves the symmetry. It can either be a gapless symmetric state, something like a Luttinger liquid. It could spontaneously break the symmetry and be gapped and short-range entangled. Or in high enough dimension, this doesn't work in the dimension I've drawn, but in D bigger than 2 for the boundary, it can be gapped, symmetric, and topologically ordered. Okay, so in all of this discussion, the gap kind of played a key role in understanding the topology, right? So the reason that the edge was confined to the edge is because there was a bulk gap. The way we even defined the phase itself relied on, you know, not having the gap close if I move around within this SPT phase. And so if I'm going to talk about gapless SPTs, you might ask, you know, what does that even mean to have a classification of gapless systems? So one way of kind of getting around this idea of adiabatic equivalence that we use to define phases in gap settings is to instead think of an equivalent characterization in terms of whether you can, you know, whether two state, yeah, okay. So I want to define a notion of equivalence between points in phase space. And I'll say that two points are equivalent if I can connect them by a finite depth circuit with local gates. And I'm going to further demand that these gates are symmetric. It turns out that I can connect any two points in this SPT phase diagram like this. You can, for example, just turn this adiabatic path into a Trotterized circuit. But if I try to connect an SPT state to a trivial one, I can only do it with gates that break the symmetry. And so there's an obstruction to doing this with a symmetric circuit. So this circuit equivalence gives me a natural way to distinguish or identify gapless states. So I can define two states with a symmetry G that are gapless. You know, maybe they're critical, maybe they're a stable gapless phase. I don't really assume anything about that. I just suppose I have two gapless states that have the same symmetry. I can say, you know, they're an inequivalent SPT, states. If they can be related by a local circuit that's overall symmetric, but they can't be related if I demand that the gates of that circuit individually preserve the symmetry. And this definition works kind of equally well for gapless systems. Yeah, so any questions about that before I jump into some examples? Okay, so you know what's known about these? These have been kind of there are a variety of examples of gapless SPT phases that have emerged in the last 5 or 6 years. The earliest examples were, you can think of them as phase transitions between an SPT and a symmetry breaking state. For example, a Haldane chain and a partial ferromagnet that breaks kind of half of the spin rotation symmetries of the Haldane chain. And the idea for these examples is that part of the edge states of this Haldane chain, if you only break part of the symmetry group, the remaining part of the symmetry group can protect the edge, some part of the edge degeneracy even at the phase transition. And so you can see a edge-related degeneracy of this critical point in numerics. So these examples have the property that if I stack the system with a Haldane chain, I can trivialize the edge. So this is an example where I have a gapless system that does have edge states, and those edge states are SPT edge states, but they're the same kind of SPT edge states I could get in a gapped system. So that's kind of a mild version of a gapless SPT. Another example, which I'll talk a lot about in a second, which was written down by Ryan Thorngren and Ruben Veresen and Ashvin, is an example where you have this kind of structure. So you have edge states that live inside of the bulk gap and are confined to the edge. But there's no gap system with the same symmetries that has those edge states. So this is what I'll call, or this is what people are calling intrinsically gapless SPTs. And this is what I want to focus on today. And then there's another example, which I don't understand at all, but I just want to mention that it exists, which are other phase transitions between, let's say, a Haldane chain and a fully symmetry broken state, where there are edge states. They're not confined by any gap to the edge. So there's no gap sector in the system. The edge states are only algebraically confined to the edge, but they seem to be topological. And at least I don't really understand this example or how to think of these in general, but it's a very intriguing example where you have a purely gapless system. And it's kind of an open question, I think, whether you can have something that's both intrinsically and purely gapless. So algebraically confined edge states, but ones that don't exist in a gap system. Yeah, sure. Oh, you want the symmetry. You want to preserve the symmetry in the phases that you're considering. Like, I want to compare two G-symmetric phases, so any circuit that relates them must necessarily be overall symmetric. Okay, every example I know of it has this property. Maybe you can ask whether you can get rid of it and still have an interesting classification. Yeah, I think if both states are singlet, it must be, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think it's kind of probably related to whether the full spectrum has the SPT order or just the ground state or something like that. Yeah, there may be beyond cohomology examples actually that don't. Yeah, the excited states can't be connected by a symmetric circuit. Yeah, maybe we can chat more. Yeah, you don't want to allow the circuit to break the symmetry though, right? At least in the state that you're mapping to, right? Because that can always be done, right? That's kind of a trivial for an invertible phase. All right, so let me focus on this intrinsically gapless example. So the kind of anatomy that seems to arise here is that the bulk has this emergent symmetry anomaly. And this anomaly is imprinted at some low energy scale. And it's cured not by arising at the edge of a higher dimensional SPT, but by gapping out degrees of freedom with a larger symmetry that lift the anomaly. And these edge states are kind of confined by this gap sector. But somehow they're also intimately tied to the gaplessness of the bulk. So how does this work? So to look at that, let me look at a proto example of how we can have an anomalous edge states without a higher dimensional SPT bulk. This is like a completely trivial example. So if you think of this, the most familiar boson SPT, it's just a Haldane chain. So you have a bulk system that has SO3 spin rotation, so it's made of integer spins. But you have edge states that transform projectively under that spin rotation symmetry, spin halves. And in this case, you don't have any spin halves in your system. So the only way this can arise is by emerging out of the bulk, and they can only, you have some anomaly cancellation between the topology of the bulk and the emergence of this projective edge state. Okay, so my claim is I can actually, instead of compensating the anomaly by a higher dimensional bulk, I can actually get this edge state on its own, where the anomaly is lifted by gap degrees of freedom, and the low energy description of these states will be exactly the same. And the example is as trivial as you could possibly think. It's just a single site of a Hubbard model. So you have on-site repulsion U, and imagine tuning the chemical potential so that the ground state has one electron. The low energy space forms a kind of doublet that has a projective representation of spin rotation. So it's exactly like the edge of this system. And the idea here is that the reason you can get this kind of anomalous representation in 0D is that the anomaly is canceled in the UV by having these fermionic states that I'm pushing up to high energies and forgetting about. And the structure here is that the microscopic symmetry of this model is an SU2 symmetry. So for example, if I compose spin rotations by pi and pi plus some angle theta, since I'm rotating, if theta is positive, I rotate past 2 pi, I'll get minus 1 to the number of fermions times the theta rotation. And so this looks a bit different than just the normal spin rotation algebra because of this minus 1 to the number of fermions. But this minus 1 to the number of fermions is actually describing a gap degree of freedom that can't be excited in this system. So at low energies, I can think of this this NF as just being locked to 1. And I have kind of an emergent SU2 degree of freedom here. So a bit of math. So I can formalize this as by the following thing. So the anomaly that we're kind of trying to describe is that of SO3 spin rotation for integer spins. And you can realize this in 0D by having a larger symmetry group, gamma, that's SU2, microscopically. So, and the difference between these low energy symmetry group and the high energy one is the fermion parity degree of freedom in this case, which is just a kind of Z2 extension of the SO3. And in general, these group extensions you can characterize by a 2 co-cycle. Which basically is a map from the 2 rotation angles to fermion parity, to Z2, like in this example. So, if someone hands you this degree, this system, and pushes this energy up to infinity, so you can't excite that, and then someone else hands you the end of a Haldane chain and pushes the bulk gap up to infinity, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between these. You could only notice the difference if you unlock these electrons and excite them to high energies. So they're very different at the lattice scale, as you said, but the IR physics is the same. That's kind of the point. Okay, yeah, and as you can tell, this example is like almost completely trivial. There's no way to look at the topology of this system because there's no boundaries. It's just like a single site. But my claim is that if you do the same thing in higher dimensions, you're gonna end up with symmetry protected edge states at the boundary of this anomalous system. All right, so let's look at Ruben and Ryan Thorngren's example. They have a very simple model that shows this. So I just want to go through this again, and then we'll revisit the structure of this model from a more general perspective that allows us to kind of generalize it to other examples. So the system is a 1D Hubbard chain plus an extra spin exchange that's like an Ising model, where these S's are the spin operators of the electrons. And I'm gonna assume the interactions are anti-ferromagnetic. And I wanna consider this model in the limit where the on-site repulsion U is large, so I can throw out doubly occupied sites. But I'm not at half filling, so I've doped the system with holes. And I want to consider this Ising antiferromagnetic exchange to be much stronger than the transverse field, so that the spins like to form an antiferromagnetic pattern when they're next to each other. And in fact, let me consider the extreme limit where I just don't have a transverse field at all. So now the spins are frozen. There's no quantum dynamics to them. And it's pretty easy to see what the lowest energy sector is going to look like. It's basically that the spins will form an alternating up-down arrangement, but interrupted by holes. And these holes can hop around, but the spins can't flip. They're kind of locked in this spin pattern. These are the spins of the electrons. So SZ is C dagger sigma ZC divided by 2. Yeah. So I just have electrons. Yeah. But you know, this wouldn't emerge from a simple Hubbard model. You'd have to have some more complicated microscopics to get this interaction. Yeah, that's right. So it's just a Hubbard model plus this extra four fermion interactions that break the spin rotation symmetry. So at low energies, you expect these holes to just hop around and form a Luttinger liquid. So the bulk is going to be gapless. And if I have periodic boundary conditions, that's the end of the story. That's all I have. But if I have open boundary conditions, there's actually two different states that I can't, for h equals 0, I can't go between. And these two different states are just labeled by whether the first spin is up or down. And you can convince yourself that if the spins can't flip, I can't tunnel between those two states. You know, after I choose the first spin, the rest are dictated by following this antiferromagnetic pattern interrupted by holes. So if I have an open boundary condition, I have a twofold ground state degeneracy, but with periodic, I have a unique ground state. And then on top of that, I have these excitations of this Luttinger liquid of holes that are gapless, but their gap goes only polynomially to 0 with system size. If I relax this h equals 0, it's pretty easy to see that the system can only tunnel from between these two ground states at high order in perturbation theory that grows with the system size. So the tunneling will be exponentially suppressed in system size, which you also see in numerical analysis of this model. Another kind of nice way to think about this is that there's kind of a hidden order in this system. There's that you can't probe with a local order parameter, but you can probe with a non-local string order. And the idea is that if I just sucked out all the holes, I would have long-range antiferromagnetic order. But I don't necessarily know where the holes are. But if I form this object where P is minus 1 if there's an electron, then measure the spin at site M, count the number of electrons in between, and measure this spin at site n, they should be anti-aligned if I take this product. So I should get minus 1 for this product. And you can see that in this kind of gapless topological phase is shown in red, that this thing has expectation value even when you take those two sites I'm measuring to be very far apart. So there's this long-range string order. And this can also be tied to these degeneracy with open boundary conditions. Yeah. I don't have time reversal symmetry here, so I don't have any Cramer's degeneracy. Yeah, this H kind of removes that. Okay, so another thing that these authors pointed out is that if you make a field theory description of this Luttinger liquid, and you look at how the symmetries act in that field theory, it's actually the exact same field theory you'd use to describe the edge of this Levin-Goo SPT that I described earlier. And so what's going on, you can interpret it in the following way. So what are the symmetries of this system? We basically just have spin rotation symmetry. And we only have an Ising spin rotation symmetry by pi around the x-axis. So this is my symmetry generator. And you might be tempted to say, well, if I flip the spin twice, I just get back The spin in its initial configuration, so this looks like a Z2 Ising symmetry. But actually, we know that if we have spin halves and we rotate them by 2 pi, we get a minus 1 sign if there's an electron on that site. So the spin at the lattice level, the symmetry is actually Z4. You need to take 4 powers of this rotation until you get back to the identity. But yeah, again, if you look at low energies, there's no odd fermion parity excitations left at low energies. I can't excite a fermion without messing up the spin pattern and paying an energy J, or making a doubly occupied site and making an energy U. Both of those are gapped. And so at low energies, I only have a Z2 quotient group defined by modding out by this fermion parity that's gapped. So the question is, how is this structure of the symmetry in the emergent anomaly connected to the edge states? And another question I want to ask is, can we use like a similar paradigm to construct more general intrinsically gapless SPTs? So let's start with the first one. The structure I just said is that at the lattice scale, we have a Z4 symmetry. But part of this is gapped out at low energies, the part associated with creating like fermionic excitations. And in the IR, I only have a Z2 subgroup. And the idea is that this Z2 subgroup is anomalous. So normally, if I act twice with a Z2 generator, nothing happens to my system. And indeed, in the bulk, that's true. But you can see that this, so if I look back at this string order, which is like measure the Z spin at the edge at site 1, measure the Z spin at site L, and multiply by the minus 1 to the number of electrons in between, that this bulk string is actually my symmetry generator squared. And the only difference between this and the symmetry generator is these edge operators. And so this string order parameter looks like basically transforming the system by this gapped symmetry sector. And in the bulk, this gapped symmetry sector acts trivially, nothing happens. But I'm left over with operators at the edge. And moreover, if you look at which operator appears at the edge, it's odd under the spin rotation symmetry. And so this actually protects a doubly degenerate edge state here, because you can't have a projective local action of symmetries with a unique ground state. The interesting thing is that the difference between this and, say, a Haldane chain is that there's actually only 2 degenerate ground states. There's not an independent spin half on both ends of the system. And that's because basically, there's no local operator that's conjugate to this sigma z operator on the end. It's only the global spin rotation. Yeah, I can't localize the spin rotation because it acts non-trivially on the gapless degrees of freedom in the bulk. Okay, so the one thing that we realized is that you can actually reinterpret the string order parameter in a way that lets you generalize this story to other symmetries in higher dimensions. And it's that you can think of this string order parameter as a 0D SPT pump. So the idea is that in 0 dimensions, you can label distinct gapped SPTs by just what is the symmetry quantum number of the ground state. So if I have a Z2 symmetry, the ground state can either have a +1 or a -1 eigenvalue under that symmetry. And I can't change the quantum number of the ground state without going through a level crossing where the gap closes. So 0D SPTs are just classified by symmetry representations. And what this string order parameter does is it acts with the gap symmetry in the bulk, and that gap symmetry pumps something that's odd under the symmetry onto the boundary. So what you can think of this string order as doing is that the gap sector symmetry is pumping a 0D SPT onto the edge. And that forces the edge to sit, to have a degeneracy between these 2 different SPT invariants, which protects the gaplessness of the edge. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so I think this is general. Like, this is the kind of generic in the sense that you could probably make fine-tune models where you have higher dimensional ground state degeneracy at the edge. In fact, I think like Lee Oshikawa have a paper where they encounter this, depending on whether how many sites they have in the chain. But I think generically you can remove those, and the only thing that's fundamentally protected is this twofold degeneracy from the argument I gave. Yeah, in higher dimensions, it's less clear, but I think the boundary would itself form a Luttinger liquid, and it's kind of less exotic than in this example. Yeah, so notice that this argument didn't make any reference to the deep IR fate of the bulk. It's just really about anomalies and localizing the symmetry from the gap sector and working out representation. So I think this is fundamental. I don't think it depends on what you choose in the IR. So the claim is, as long as you preserve the symmetry at the edge and leave these fermion excitations gapped, you'll get this structure if you add generic perturbations. Yeah, so we can actually use some results from Tachikawa to kind of generalize this. And the structure of the result is a bit messy to show explicitly, but let me just describe it at a high level. The idea is, like, suppose you have an emergent, so an anomaly that is characterized, could arise at the edge of a boson SPT in higher dimensions, but I just want to realize this in the same dimension, like in the previous examples. So it turns out that if I have a G anomaly that's characterized by this group cohomology classification, so it means it's characterized by some D plus two co-cycle with U1 coefficients. If that doesn't mean anything to you, just kind of ignore the fine print. The basic idea is that I can always define a larger symmetry gamma that's a central extension of G. And the idea is that we're going to gap out these extending degrees of freedom N, so that even though the lattice system has an anomaly-free symmetry, the IR will have this anomaly printed on it. And we can use these lattice models that people write down for group cohomology elements to design exactly solvable Hamiltonians that imprint an anomaly below some energy scale delta. And qualitatively, what these do is they kind of bind these gapped N degrees of freedom, get gapped by binding to like defects of this G symmetry breaking patterns. The second thing that Tachikawa showed, which is that you can always take this D plus two co-cycle and decompose it as follows. You can decompose it into an extension co-cycle that basically defines this central extension. And that has coefficients in the extending symmetry group. And the other piece is a D co-cycle with coefficients in, hang on for a second, the Pontryagin dual of N. Okay, so this looks like a complicated beast. So how do we interpret this thing physically? So the dual of N maps an element of N to U1. So if I feed this BD an N element, it gives me a D co-cycle. And D co-cycles are D minus one dimensional gapped SPTs. Okay, so basically what this BD characterizes is this SPT pumping action. So if I act on the system with some element of this gapped symmetry group, it pumps a lower dimensional SPT specified by this onto the boundary. And what happens then is that the boundary is forced to be symmetric under toggling its SPT invariant. And roughly speaking, forces the boundary to sit at a critical point between the different SPT invariants of the edge. And so as long as I preserve this symmetry G, it's going to force me to have non-trivial gapless states at the boundary. Okay, so we worked out a bunch of examples of this. Let me just highlight a couple of them that are not too crazy. So there's an example where you can think of a two-dimensional system with time reversal symmetry. And the idea is that it's going to realize the anomaly of a 3D boson SPT surface state. And the model looks something like this. You have qubits on the vertices of a triangular lattice. And you have Cramer's doublet bosons. So gray means no boson, red means a boson, sitting on the plaquettes. And the Hamiltonian we designed basically locks a vortex in these spin degrees of freedom to one of these Cramer's bosons. So at low energies, these Cramer's boson degrees of freedom are all locked away to the spin texture of these qubits. And the idea is that the bulk will have this anomaly of surface state. So if you like to label your anomalies by surface topological orders, for those that know what this means, this is like ET-MT anomaly. And there are many, you know, depending on what detailed interactions you write down, you could either get symmetry breaking or gapless or topologically ordered states in the bulk. The one gapless and symmetric option would be the field theory that you usually see at deconfined quantum critical points. And the edge of this system, so I just said that, you know, what's special about the edge is that there's a symmetry under pumping 1D SPTs onto the boundary. With time reversal symmetry, the only SPT that is around for bosons is the Haldane chain. And so the edge is tuned to a critical point between a Haldane chain and a trivial paramagnet. And so we know in 1D what that critical point is. It's just the Heisenberg spin chain critical point, so an SU2 level 1 CFT. And then there's a more complicated question of what happens when both the edge and the bulk are gapless. And this is something I don't generally know how to study. But Chang and Ruchan have studied like a large N version of this. And it seems that in the large N limit, the edge and the bulk kind of decouple. So you can actually have a system where you have this gapless bulk and a decoupled Luttinger liquid at the edge.
So what do you mean?
Yeah, it's they have some parton construction for realizing this with fermion partons, and you take large NF. Yeah. Okay, another interesting thing that happens in higher, or that can happen in higher D that can't happen in lower dimensions, is that if you have an emergent anomaly in higher, in two or higher dimensions, it doesn't mean that your system is necessarily gapped. Or sorry, gapless, even if you know it per their symmetry. Another option is that the bulk could have a topological order with an anomalous symmetry action on the anions. So this is a little bit more delicate of a situation. In order to really define an anomalous topological order, you need the energy scale for the topological, for the gapped excitations of the topological order to be well separated from the energy scale or the anomaly imprints. Otherwise, this is just like a boring SET of the non-anomalous UV symmetry. But let's assume that's the case. You can, in this example, you can get a bulk topological order that looks like a toric code, but where the E and the M particles are both Cramer's doublets, which is something that's not allowed in a microscopic system with non-Cramer's bosons. So one option for this system would be that the bulk has this all Cramer's doublet toric code, and the edge is a like a Heisenberg spin chain. And you can, the sharp way of defining this kind of anomalous SET is that there's no way to get rid of this gapless edge state of this without closing the gap to these extending degrees of freedom, these Cramer's bosons that got locked away at high energies. So this is separated by an edge phase transition from a trivial SET that's not anomalous. So we call this a quotient symmetry enriched topological order. Quotient because it's kind of protected by the low energy symmetry, which is a quotient of the lattice symmetry when you mod out by the extending degrees of freedom. From this a modification of these lattice models that I showed down, we can actually write down exactly solvable models that show this behavior. All right, I think I'm kind of out of time, so let me just flash one more thing so we can construct also 3D examples. And in 3D, there's this interesting feature that both the bulk and the surface can in principle be topologically ordered. And so there's an example with Ising symmetry in the IR where you have this anomalous 3D topological order where you have a point like E excitation and a line like M flux excitation, so it's like 3D toric code. But the M excitation actually carries one of these 1D gapless SPTs that are like in this Ising-Hubbard model. So this is a type of topological order that can't arise except in this at the boundary of this emergent anomalous system. That was kind of a fun example, I thought. Okay, so we've worked out a bunch of examples, but I think there are many open questions. So we don't know if this set of examples is anywhere approaching complete, even for we don't know if there are other mechanisms for edge states besides emergent anomalies. And actually, we know for sure that we don't know how to describe yet whether there are IGSPTs protected by anomalies beyond group cohomology formalism. It would also be kind of nice if we could find models that were more like this Ising-Hubbard model with kind of like reasonable interactions that you might find in like a realistic system. So that's something we're also kind of working towards. And then I think there are these more exotic and intriguing instances of like systems where you don't have an emergent anomaly in the bulk, but the edges are protected and there's not even a gap sector to protect them. So these purely gapless SPT examples. Yeah, anyway, thanks for your attention, and happy to take any more questions.
Thank you for an interesting talk. So the talk is open to questions or comments. Go ahead.
Yes, so a pretty basic question, actually. So when I do have a gapless system, is there a precise definition of what the edge of your system actually is? So for example, for like a gap system, I imagine that I have like edge cutoff is some amount that's greater than the correlation length.
Yeah.
Is there some like similar definition I can get for the edge of a gapless system?
Yes, well, so for these intrinsically gapless SPT phases, there's always a gap sector that's confining the edge states, and so you can use the correlation length of that system. For these purely gapless examples, there's no length scale that confines the edge. And what you would want to see is that the edge mode decays faster than any of the local scaling dimensions that can be excited by local operators in the bulk. And so there's a sense in which the edge mode is more confined in those examples than the bulk correlations, even though they're both power loss. But in the partially gapped examples, then you can just use the usual notion of local.
All right, great, thank you.
Sure. Uh-huh. It sounds actually purely gapless and intrinsically gapless. And maybe that's right. Because the edge is kind of the edge can leak out by power law extent as you get towards the bulk node. Yeah, and there's no gap system you can cancel it with. Yeah, so maybe that's an example in this missing.
So how do you detect this, especially given the bulk?
Yeah, well, they transform differently under symmetry, so you'd have to have some probe that resolves the difference between them. So, in the 1D examples, you get some if you put on a tiny field, the edge will magnetize. And you can detect this magnetization near the edge, but it would decay exponentially into the bulk. Yeah, that's right. If your edge also has some kind of weird anomaly to it, so you may want to probe domain walls in that boundary. I don't think they'll host gapless modes in the examples we noted. It's more like a Berry phase if you flip, if you fuse the domain walls in different paths. I don't really know how to detect that experimentally. Yeah, I guess the same question already for the Levin goo model edge. Yeah, I mean, I think like what we really need to do is write down models that you can realize as like mod insulators of electrons, and then you can think about like interacting with them in like sensible ways for experimentalists and try to ask those questions. Yeah, we also kind of need field theories of these so that you can actually probe like linear response and talk about like experiments. So right now we're kind of not there yet.